You sound like Rico Suave, though. Like, my name is B.
That's ridiculous. Hey.
You grew your hair out and got some curls. You don't know how to act. You trying to bring light skin back.
Me and Alfie Shore and Christopher Williams trying to bring it back. Y'all mess around. Super fantastic. As always, the show is sponsored by Eating for Abs. Visit eatingforabs.com. The Ultimate Nutrition Course is a great way to get started, to get off the couch, and get moving towards your body goals. You will learn to align your environment, activity, rest, and nutrition all in your favor towards losing weight, feeling better, losing size, getting healthy, dropping medication, and achieving fantastic health. That's all there is to it. Eatingforabs.com. And now back to the Super Fantastic Show. Welcome to another episode of the Super Fantastic Show. I'm your host, Coach B. Moore. In this episode, we're going to talk to an Eating for Abs alum who has come through the Ultimate Nutrition Course, who is an E4A Myrmidon through the E4A Elite Course, who as a result has changed her body to the tune of more than 40 pounds. You may have seen her or her progress pics on our page. And it's the woman in the purple bikini. She is a medical doctor. Her name is Dr. Erica Goodwin. She's a graduate of Spelman College in Atlanta. And she has done and continues to do an incredible job. So in this conversation, you will hear her honest takes, you know, where she misstepped and what she did right and what she's still doing. And, you know, she's a career woman. She's got real life going on and she's in the 40 plus club. And to make that kind of change, while, you know, also being a road warrior is incredible. I mean, this woman spends maybe 80 to 90% of her time on travel as a result of her job. So her challenges are real and her results are real. And also one of the special things about this episode is you'll get to hear an actual coaching call. So as we get to talking, you will hear her and I interaction in terms of talking about the real tangibles of what she'll have to do to go from where she is now to achieving her next level goal. So stay tuned and pay attention. Welcome to the Super Fantastic Show.
The Super Fantastic Show.
Yeah. So listen, Erica, you're currently in Atlanta, right?
Correct.
Before you head back to the road, because you are the road warrior. And you also just celebrated your 20-year anniversary in Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it is.
So I'm doing all that to kind of, I'm not trying to back you into age. I'm just trying to let people know who are listening that we're talking about an adult, an accomplished person who is not, you're not 19, you know, you're not without work to do. You're not without regular everyday challenge. You travel a ton. You are responsible at work and you still were able to, without surgery, without, you know, what do they call those things? Without putting Saran wrap around your body every day.
No waist trainers.
With all that crap.
No stimulants.
Right. You were able to make incredible progress. So I guess my first question is, what's the number one difference you noticed now after you've making this big progress? What's the number one thing that's just different than it was, you know, 18 months ago?
Beyond just how I feel as a person, one of the really big differences is I actually enjoy looking at myself in the mirror no matter how many clothes I have on.
Okay, that's fantastic. It actually reminds me of one of the pictures that you sent in from the changing booth in Lululemon. It was so full of energy. It was like, yes, look at this. Pow, yes, that is booty. Yes, that is waistline. Rocking it. I love it.
But if you said like of a more deep level, I just say that it's opened a gateway for me to just be happier. It's kind of how each thing builds on itself. Mm-hmm. So it's the dedication that it took to take better care of myself and be more mindful of what I put in my body and how I take care of my body reflects itself in my energy level and my spiritual health.
Right. That's fantastic. We're going to share a whole lot in this conversation, okay?
Okie doke.
Okay. So you touched on the medical profession, and I have this thing about the medical profession as it's practiced in America. And I just think it's ridiculous that we expect our healthcare professionals to be able to take care of their patients when we don't allow you guys enough time for self-care. in my opinion. What do you think about that? Do you think that's real?
I think it's very true. It's part of the reason I changed and went in a bit more of a non-traditional practice arrangement, where me allowing self-care means that I don't work year-round. Mm-hmm. It means less money. But given for what I do and my personality type, I'd always say that if I was a sci-fi character, I'd be an empath. So that given the emotional energy I deal with, I can't do that year-round and still function to my best ability.
Right.
But I do think the medical profession in itself is set up in a way that it's not set up for time off. A lot of the expectations of productivity are totally unrealistic. Some of the customer service expectations are actually also unrealistic. Mm-hmm. The hours that the average person keeps are outrageous. The way it's structured, you know, a lot of people aren't eating lunch, aren't eating regularly, are too tired to actually take care of themselves. And then you end up in a situation where you're trying to tell your patients what to do and you're not doing it. So for me, practically, as I've grown as a person, then it gives me more practical tips of how to exchange that information to my patients. It's hard to, you know, it's always like you look at the internist, you're like, how do you sit up and tell people to quit smoking when you're taking smoke breaks on the roof?
Right.
Well, how do you tell people you need to eat healthier when you're overweight or obese? And it doesn't mean that you don't have the knowledge. It doesn't mean that you don't have the skill. It doesn't mean that you don't have the empathy and you don't care. It's just, it's kind of like when you're choosing a personal trainer. If you're in the gym and somebody says, this is your trainer, and your trainer looks chunky or out of shape or looks like you can bench more than they can, then they're not necessarily a walking advertisement for the service they're providing.
Right.
And I think part of our, you know, in medicine, it's more than the actual medication and being in a position where you can be healthy enough that you have tools to help others even more than you do when you just have what you have when you're just trying to get by yourself.
It's funny. I've got a couple things that just came out of what you just said. Number one, before I forget, if you are an empath and you know about sci-fi, so which empath or which sci-fi universe would you be a part of? Would you be like Deanna Troi in Star Trek? Would you be somebody in Star Wars universe?
Well, there weren't really strong empaths in Star Wars, even though Star Wars is my absolute favorite.
The Force isn't that empathy?
Yeah, but it's a little different. The Force is its own energy. So, I mean, if I'd say I was in Star Wars, could I really say I'm as expansive as the Force?
Could you be like Yoda could sense when Luke was in pain elsewhere?
Yes, but that was more of a function of the Force and him being able to tap into the universal energy.
It's Force sensitivity. Okay. So where are we going? Where would you say you are going?
I'd have to be Star Trek.
Sit next to the captain.
Yep.
There it is. Okay. Now, there was a story about Gandhi. And I'm going to tell it horribly, but it's so funny because it's just what you just said.
But that's how you tell stories.
What? I mess them up? I do mess stories up all the time. And then I refer you to go read this because I told it. I totally sucked at it. So here, go read the story. But I'm going to tell you right now anyway. And I'm going to mess it up. And it's okay. All right. So this woman comes to see Gandhi, right? And she waits in line for hours because, you know, he's on his, like, in his office hours, you know, he's hanging out for that day and people are expected to come see him. So this woman waits all day, all night with her son to see Gandhi. When she finally gets up to see Gandhi, she walks up to him with her son and says, Mahatma, I want you to help me to tell my son to stop eating sweets. He eats way too many sweets. And I need him to understand that it's important that he not eat as much sugar and that he stop. You know, so that he can make his father and I proud and he can live long and healthy. So Gandhi looks at the boy who's now peeking from around his mom's dress and he says, come here. And the boy comes around the corner. He goes, do you eat a lot of sweets? And the boy goes, you know, yeah. He goes, he looks at the mom. He thinks for a second. He goes, come back in 2 weeks. And the mom is like, what? I just waited all day. 2 days with this kid in this heat. India hot. Flies. To come see you. So what's she going to do? She leaves, goes 2 weeks, she comes back, waits in the long line again, comes back to the front, goes to see Gandhi. She says, we came 2 weeks ago and I wanted you to tell my son to stop eating sweets and da 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 da. And he goes, yes, I remember. And I told you to come back. He says, please forgive me. I told you to come back because at the time that you came last time, I was still eating a lot of sweets. And I found it hypocritical to tell your boy not to eat so many sweets until I myself was able to cut my habit down. So it's exactly what you're talking about. And I know I screwed that story up, but it's still a good read and it's something to have in the library. It's exactly what you mean. I think that when people think about losing weight, the first thing they think about doing is buying a gym membership. And I think that's absolutely not the way to go. I think the way to start is elsewhere, but you know, trainers are good once you have settled what's going on inside of you, which we're going to talk about. So you help people, literally your job is to help people adopt change for a living. That's what you do.
That is correct.
Right. So here we are on the precipice of like you deciding to make this change. And I don't know if you realize how big a deal it was when you started in, but let's go back to that time and just talk about like, not the beginning, at some point in your life, you said, I want something different for me. And what was that like? And what was the energy around it? What were you thinking?
Well, I actually can pinpoint it exactly.
Okay.
It was February of 2013. Mm-hmm. We had done a girls' weekend. Two of my close friends from St. Louis, we were all in Atlanta. At the time, I wasn't living in Atlanta. And one of my girls does a lot of vision boards and those kinds of things. So we'd had this great weekend of reconnecting. I did my first vision board, and I think it just happened to be a time where I was a little bit more open, and I realized that I had some goals coming up. I was like, let me give some time periods, and it just kind of started the ball rolling of me actually taking some time to have actually set attention on myself.
Right.
I'd been before that just kind of spinning, nothing really horrible, but just grown-up stuff. I will admit I'm over 40. When you're dealing with your family and other responsibilities, sometimes it just gets to a point where you just lose focus on yourself.
Right.
And I can't say that for me, when I gained my weight over an extended period of time, it wasn't like I gained it over like a couple of months or something like that. It's just one day you look up and you're like, ooh, I'm big.
Right.
And that kind of started the ball moving. So then move forward to July of the same year.
Wait, what was on the vision board?
Let me grab it. I still have it.
Nice.
This one, we start, there's like big idea, be new, be you, innovation, happy place, family, unstoppable, uncensored, a little money tree. B always gets a kick because for some reason, when I look at romance, Michael Ealy pops up, even though it's not the same since he's all married and stuff. I'm happy he's married and in a great relationship. Yay. But he's on there. Some yoga stuff, people working out, a couple having dinner, one that says you are here. There's like a little Elmo, somebody getting a massage on the beach, something else kind of tropical, and like a plane, and something about health and some hot shoes.
Okay. So what on that board, when you were looking, when you, if you look back now to that time period, February 13, what on that board was reflective of you wanting to take better care of yourself?
Well, I think it ends up, it's the corner. There's a whole corner that's kind of more fitness related. There's a young lady that's doing, I'm trying to think of what you call it. It's kind of like you're in a plank position, and instead of doing a mountain climber where your knee comes up to your chest, her knee goes to her elbow.
Okay.
So well,
she's
like,
fit. She's fit looking.
Oh yeah. She's very fit looking.
Okay.
Yeah. They're fit looking. Okay. And then kind of there's this kind of idea of being new and kind of innovating myself, and that all kind of ties together.
Okay. Now I interrupted you and you were saying something about June.
So that summer, my buddy's birthday is July 3rd, mine is July 28th. And this was the summer. I think everybody has it. Once you turn 40, there are a million trips, but everybody turning 40. Everybody goes on a trip for turning 40. So it was her trip for turning 40. On the plane ride to Miami, I ended up sitting next to the person that has been my personal trainer since I started. Mm-hmm. And we had an interesting conversation. It was funny. When I first met him, I was like, I don't even want to speak to this dude. But we had a really nice conversation, and he had given me his card and said, come on in, you know, to get a fitness assessment. And I said, yeah, I knew I needed another trainer. I hadn't been that happy with the ones when I last had trainers. It was like an LA Fitness. Oops. The ones that I had were good, wouldn't be there long, or then you'd have people that just really weren't that focused. So I said, okay. And I knew I was doing some traveling. I said, when I get back, because at the time I was working out of town, I'll come in and see you. And we had this great weekend with my girlfriends. And I just kind of made a decision that for 40, that I was going to really focus on actually being dedicated on taking care of myself. And I think the difference between that and other times, because I'm a perpetual start and stopper when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I can be a procrastinator too. But, you know, I'd do something for a little while. I'd start losing weight. But after 2 or 3 months, it'd be back to whatever I was doing before, mm-hmm. you know, and it would just perpetually happen to me over the last few, you know, the last few years when I would even do anything. So we always laugh when he has other clients come in. I say, you know, hey, you can do it. Cause when I started, I couldn't do jack. I couldn't even really squat the bar, just right. the bar, you know, it was literally starting from scratch. I had no skills. You know, I wasn't someone that started working out with a trainer after I was already sort of in shape or getting in shape. I about puked during the fitness assessment numerous times. And when we first started working out, I was nauseous all the time. And he's just like a food Nazi. And that's why I like UB, because he doesn't have a love for food. I needed eventually to work with someone that to go to the next level, to be able to integrate how to continue being healthy, but do it from a standpoint of someone that actually likes food. He's a eat to liver.
Right.
He's not big into the taste of food. Thinks you know, I get yelled at all the time for eating out. I love to eat out. I'm like, we got to find a middle ground here. So that's kind of, you kind of come in as someone that enjoys food too. So you can have a normal conversation or work around how to still have enjoyable food versus dysfunctional food.
Right. I think that combination of being able to work with somebody who's patient, because it sounds like he's super patient, especially if you're starting from zero. And consistent, like, you know, I'm showing up so many times when people meet a trainer, that's the reason for going to the gym sometimes in the beginning. It's like, well, I already have the appointment and I don't want to let them down, which is powerful, you know? So that, along with the stuff that we'll talk about later in terms of what you did with us, I think is huge. And I know that's what worked for you. It's fantastic. You know, like you said, getting past that start stop energy was a big deal.
You know? Well, and it was a different type of working out than I'd done before. There are activities I've enjoyed over the years, mm-hmm. but this is the most weight I've ever lifted. And I think that was also a big difference in being able to change my body composition was to do more weight training. You know, so I feel like that's where I started. And then I'd started on my journey. So by the time I got to you, then I was ready to do the next step. And I think what made it easier to embrace some of those, the newer principles, was that by that point, I wasn't starting from, I'm still eating 100% crazy all the time, you know.
Is that how you describe how you were eating before?
I wouldn't say it was really 100% crazy all the time, but there wasn't much mindful in it. It was like, yeah, you need to eat greenery, but I wasn't really thinking much about what I was eating. You know, you'd be in those things where, oh, this is really yummy, I'm going to eat that. And then next day you go somewhere else. Oh, that's really yummy. I'm going to eat that.
Those are my favorite waffles ever. I'm going to see that on Tuesday. Are my favorite biscuits ever. I'm going to eat them on Wednesday. Right.
And it's not that I don't think it was one of those things where I'd never been much of an overeater at a time, because I got it from my mother. If I overeat, I get physically ill. So I've never been one of those people that could have a huge pile of food. I didn't grow up in a traditional Southern culture of clean your plate. Because I think that's also a pitfall for a lot of people, is the clean your plate culture, that if you have this big plate of full food or even a medium plate, but you're full, they're always eating past satiation. And then you end up with the people that are kind of like, my mom would call my dad garbage can Harry. So garbage can Harry is the person that if you don't clean your plate, they clean your plate for you.
Okay.
You know, and it's just so many, thank God I didn't have those habits, but it's, you know, it's just also just as important what you eat and when you eat it.
Part of that is also cultural. I mean, you know, depending on where we come from and what our family history is, part of that is I just, you know, because we didn't have that much money, maybe the generation before that, wasting food is something we just don't do.
And is why you start learning that I've lived in the South a lot. I don't I try to be as pleasant as possible about not letting other people fix my plate, because I don't want you to get upset if I don't finish my plate.
Right.
But people tend to get portions much bigger than I need.
Right.
And then I eat slow. So sometimes I even overestimate and it wasn't even that much food.
Right. One of the key things there that we always have to try to jar people out of is that scarcity mindset. And we don't even realize we're in it sometimes, but we treat food so much with a scarcity principle, like, this is the last time I'm going to eat. I don't know when my next meal is going to be. I mean, that's functionally how we're acting, you know, instead of there's food everywhere. It's everywhere. It's in abundance. And that abundance principle says that, you know, we can have a smaller meal now because I'll have another opportunity to find food anywhere I go.
Well, and some of it's building your life in a pattern that you have the time to eat again, you know, so yeah. It's not one of those you pack every minute so full that you're eating for your life, you know, at late at night because you didn't have time to eat all day, or you're trying to eat your lunch in 5 minutes and you're not going to have time to eat again until forever. And there's a point where you just have to look at other ways to do it so that you're not just setting yourself up for a point where your body's never going to let go of anything because it's just holding on for dear life. And then typically, you know, if you wait too late, then you start eating crap or you eat what's there because you're so hungry. I mean, I can honestly say most of the times when I eat something that's just totally whack, you're just looking like I'm about to fall out or I'm going to eat this right here.
Right.
And the best way to avoid it is not to get to that point where you feel like you're literally about to fall out. So you're like, I'm about to fall out. I'm going to eat this Biscoff cookie on this plane.
Yeah. All right. So look, I want you to pause 1 second and I'll quantify for people the numbers, the numerical difference, however you want to, between where you were February 2013 and where you are today. Pant size, dress size.
I've never been phenomenal with body fat percentage. So
okay,
already discussed that I'm going to do a project for that.
Yes, let's do weight, because we are going to do a project for that. Let's do weight and dress size or pant size or whatever.
When I started my journey in August of 2013, I was around 189 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now 147.
Okay, so legitimate 40 pounds and change.
Yes, and okay. I think for people it looks more dramatic because I've always been dense,
mm-hmm.
and I've built a lot of muscles, so it's kind of going from, it's like trying to, you know, being a black woman with hips. It's like if you go sizes, it depends on body part. So, you know, you went from largest to small.
Okay, so one do you like? You want to do shirt size or do you want to do letter sizes? What do you want?
I'd say if you went like small, medium, large, it's kind of like going from a high, medium to a large to a small. Then if you went numeric sizes, it was kind of like, depending on what it was like a 14. Mm-hmm. And now I'm comfortably a 6.
Okay. That's huge. 14 to 6. So it can be done.
Oh, I look at it this way. If I could do it, anybody could do it. Because it's not like, I'm not a celebrity, so I didn't have like a personal chef, a trainer that came to my house and
train 6 hour days and all that.
You know, all of that. I wasn't doing dance rehearsal like Janet Jackson, you know. Mm-hmm. I do realize that there are some things that were easier for me that, you know, you just have to work around what your situation is. For me, one of the things that isn't in my way is I don't have kids and stuff.
Right.
So, you know, when it's looking at my schedule is determined by me. And I do realize that that's a little different logistic. And I do have a good job. So when I got a trainer, I could afford to see my trainer 4 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some people that even if they did use a personal trainer, that going as often as I initially went or go when I'm in town was impossible. I know it's also possible to do it because there are a lot of time I wasn't with my trainer because I was on the road. You know, and then just trying to find what works for you. And still, I still struggle with getting to the gym when there is no workout, no trainer, and no class.
Right.
But I feel like anybody could do it because I don't feel like I was that special in that kind of way. I think part of it is just getting to the point where you can actually, it has to be something that's beyond a want. it can't, it's that mind shift where it's not, I want to lose weight, I want to be healthier. It has to be almost like a need, one step away from desperation, so that you have the level of commitment that's long enough to sustain it so that it becomes your lifestyle. Because I hate the word diet. Mm-hmm. You're like, what about your diet? Or what do you, you know, I go to certain restaurants and they know me because we've had a conversation. They're like, are you still on your diet? It's like, I don't like the word diet because diet sounds like something you do temporarily.
Yeah.
For a change that's not most likely going to be sustainable, you know, and I say I have an eating plan.
Right. And not a meal plan. Not to be confused with a meal plan, right? Mm-mm. Which is eat specifically this thing, you know, but you have guidelines. You have principles by which.
You know, and when I go outside of them, I don't go outside long. I think people can do it, but I don't personally do like cheat day, because I don't need to eat stuff that I wouldn't normally eat for an entire day, because part of the way of making this work is having your palate change. If I eat a bunch of sugar for a sustained period of time, my palate retrains and then wants the sugar again, or it re-wants the fried food or whatever. Yeah. So, or it, you know, it just doesn't throw me off as much. So it's like, you know, every once in a while there's a special occasion, you eat something, but it can't be more than one meal.
Right. I really want to hear from you the impact of the changes that you've made through the course, and how you kind of, what were the big moments for you? Kind of, okay. Which ones made a big difference?
I guess for people that don't know me, I'd like to clarify that I never during this portion of my process trained and wasn't doing something about what I ate. I believe one of the biggest things that made the impact was getting to a point where it wasn't looked as deprivation,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think part of it was kind of looking at what food really means,
okay.
you know, because I'm someone that love food. I still love food. I thoroughly enjoyed the omelet I made. You know, I love food, but still looking at it as, and I've seen it on numerous places, but I do think strongly is changing the relationship to food.
Yep.
So I can still enjoy food, but food has a purpose. Food is a fuel for my body. Fuel helps my body run better, which helps my mind run better, which helps my, yeah, more mental clarity and more spiritual groundness. So you have to be very particular of the fuel you put in your body, because you know what you want out of your body. And I think for me, part of what helped everything come together for me, number one, was the way I was training was so intense and needed so much out of me that right. If I didn't fuel it correctly, I wouldn't be successful. If I didn't eat correctly and eat enough, then I would be ready to puke and feel horrible, or I wouldn't lift as well, or it'd be harder to focus on my technique because I was feeling like I was about to die.
Right.
So that also kind of pushed it. But they were kind of depending on the stage, because when I first did the course, as B knows, I didn't make it through the full course. I only did the first three or four lessons, but they have served me so phenomenally that I'd say that those first three or four habits are pretty life-changing. It was a process of helping to refine things, be more mindful of them, also redistributing my protein, and how to really pay attention and being more mindful of what was going in my body, how it was going in. You know, I found that some of the lessons regarding they have different names, but a lot of them are all tied to learning your satiety.
So it's important, I guess, to give the history now, because you were in what we call the Ultimate Nutrition Course,
mm-hmm.
and you ended up via life challenges, you know, dropping out about halfway through. And then you came back when we had the, what's now called Ephraim Elite. You were one of our first Myrmidons to come through. So through that time, you had been traveling a lot, because we're going to get into your travel in a second. I think you discounted your challenges a minute ago, and I don't want that to stand, right?
Okay.
So we're going to make sure we stack the other side of that scale in a minute, because there are two categories of travelers, and you're the harder, what I call the harder category of travelers. Talk about the experience in the Myrmidons course, and what if any changes stood out to you and your trainer from the changes we made there, which is just, you know, the crash course baptized in fire situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest changes was there was a lot of refining and learning specifics around the nutrition. So you have general principles, and ironically, we didn't even talk about some of those as much in that particular group. You know, you're trying not to eat, you know, your white carbs and stuff that's just not going to be as nutritionally dense for you, and don't eat a bunch of sugar and all that kind of stuff. But I think what ended up happening for me, which was the most useful, was number one, becoming more cognizant and drinking more water being something that became more natural. And I also was definitely not eating enough protein to support the activity I was doing. And one of the other changes was that between when I did the Ultimate Nutrition course, I've never been an egg eater. Eggs made me sick as a little kid. I did not eat eggs. By the time we did, I'll call it E for A Elite, I was eating eggs, which helped when we were trying to increase protein content. Was right. That so? It was like the water protein, kind of shifting some of the distribution of vegetables I ate. I always ate quite a few vegetables, but I started eating even more, but more, even more cruciferous vegetables, because that was a major theme, was shifting to more cruciferous vegetables. And then, so it was the veggies, water, protein. And then when we got to looking at macros and realizing that even though I wasn't eating, and I hate to call them carbs because people are like, do you eat carbs? You don't eat carbs. I'm like, technically everybody eats carbs.
Right.
There's carbohydrates in your apple.
In everything. Right.
You know, but it's, you know, I'm like, you know, there's certain ones that I eat more than others. You know, it's a real treat a day that I eat a regular potato.
Right.
You know, but even getting an eye when we did macros of how much of, like, I'm a quinoa lover. I love quinoa. How much quinoa or how much brown rice or how much bulgur would hit those targets? And I realized I was eating significantly more of those things.
Right.
And then also I was a very heavy fruit eater prior to this program.
Yeah. I was gonna check you on that if you didn't bring it up.
So those shifts. The crazy thing is now I look at pictures. I look substantially different before that program and now. Even though if it's a picture and I have on long sleeves and stuff, you can't really tell. But I'm, especially in my upper body, I'm substantially leaner.
Right.
Even right. In my neck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know. I think you're short again. I think you're shortchanging the things that happened and what you did there, right? So,
I guess the other thing is I was on the road probably 98% of that program.
Right, you were that type 2 traveler, that long term traveler who is never getting back to home scenario. You know, who's rarely ever going to be there. Who's flying a lot. It's not 1 or 2 day trips. It's 1 or 2 weeks at a time. And how do I manage living in a hotel and making all this incredible change happen? And so not only were you, you know, away from your home environment, your home, away from your home trainer, away from your home kitchen, but you were able to make significant progress in that scenario. And that's why I say, I think you discounted earlier what your challenges were. You allowed, by saying the stuff you said, it's true. You said, you know, hey, look, I run my own schedule. And I don't have, you know, to consider kids' schedule or my spouse's schedule, da 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 da. And immediately there's people listening that say, well, shoot, now it can't be done. In the back of their head, even if they're not thinking it in the front of their head, in the back of their head, something has just let them off the hook. Well, she did it, but she didn't have the challenges I have. But we never loaded the other side of the scale that said, but wait, she's on the road like 80% of the time.
I guess we can add, I had insomnia the entire time we did that.
Right.
So I didn't have one good night's sleep the entire time we did that program.
And that's something we worked on. We worked on that a lot. That was like a major theme with you, was figuring out how to work on recovery and, you know, what's that going to look like? And even if sleep is going to be challenging, then where else can we, what other tools can we employ that's going to allow you to gain some recovery points?
And if you say probably what, you know, if you said what were the top three things beyond, I'd have to say macros, water, protein. But the next one behind it was the discussions we had on recovery. Because I think for me, now I'm totally psyched to see where I am now that I think I actually needed a prolonged recovery because I hadn't slept in so long and I'd been just so worn down that I really needed a prolonged recovery. So the crazy thing is that, you know, B and I have been in touch, that I've continued to see gains, even though, you know, I'm just now starting to get back to working out regularly again. But right. I've continued to have gains, even when there are times where, you know, I was either traveling or it was my birthday, mm-hmm. you know, and I still have had gains.
Right. Right.
So not in the weight department.
Right. Progress. Progressive.
I guess progress is better.
Yeah. So again, I just want to hammer that home, is that the amount of time you're on the road and the difficulty inherent in that. Number one, you have a highly emotionally taxing career as a psychiatrist, which was, I'm sure, a big part of your inability to sleep. You know, being on the road, I mean, we dealt with the hotel gym situation, like the gym is whack. Okay, so we're going to allow the gym to be whack, and we're going to do other things to get you outside or to figure out what we can do in the room. But also, the main focus, I think, that the two big things that I think were huge in your time in E4A Elite was the synergy of your class was incredible, right? It became very much a self-sustaining support structure that everybody contributed to and benefited from. And that kind of whirlwind of support was huge. I think it worked for everyone. And then also shining the real light numerically on what your real behaviors were and what your goals were and what numbers would lead to the goals. There is hard science there. And getting past just eating quote unquote healthy, because you ate a lot of fruit, and fruit is, you know, is healthy. You know, it's natural food, right? But we were clearly having too much of that for your goals, and not enough protein, and actually being able to quantify those things, I think was huge progress for you. Another thing was remember the veggie bag?
Oh yeah, and the veggie bag was fun. Not at the moment.
Torturous in the moment, but afterwards.
The crazy thing is, after that, I mean, I go through withdrawal, because the crazy thing is, we talked about when you travel, depending on where you're traveling, protein to me is easy to find.
That's right.
It's decent vegetables, because you go some places, like when I was just on vacation, shoot, there wasn't, everything was a dang potato.
Yeah.
It was a lot of potatoes, depending on what culture you're in, depends on what their feelings are about green leafy vegetables. You might not see them, you know, so it's interesting. I found traveling, it depends on where you're traveling. When I'm traveling domestically, I can usually source out what I need extremely easily.
Right.
It's when I travel internationally, number one, because you're not going to be out everywhere, and depending on what the culture is, and there are some places you go, what people eat at home and what's available in restaurants and whether or not you're close enough to a store or in a hotel that would accommodate going to a store, getting some stuff and keeping it in your place is very different. Because like we were in Argentina, the people there ate vegetables. The right. restaurants didn't serve vegetables. They served potatoes.
Because they're cheap, they store easy, and they stretch food. So it increases their profit margin. Right. But the people eat them.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so like when I was just out of town, it was, there was a lot of fruit because I was in the Caribbean.
Yep.
But, you know, depending on where you were, depending on whether or not, you know, how the veggie situation was. But, you know, you just kind of make it work and do what you can.
Yeah. And you know what? Even if you failed miserably during the week that you were in the Caribbean, what about the other 51 weeks? You know, there's grounds for letting yourself go and saying, hey, I'm not going to beat myself up because it was more difficult to find what I need while I was away in Barbados versus, you know, when I was home in Atlanta, that was I doing what I need to be doing during the other 51 weeks, in which case you are, which is why, you know, there's no need for any negativity regarding whatever happened or didn't happen on a celebratory trip in the Caribbean. You know, and that's just the reality. I think that too many times people are already living past the line and then go celebrate. Like, you never ever get any recovery. You never get any counterbalance to just supporting the negative habits that are holding us back.
Well, and I think the other thing is when you do those trips too, though, there's a point where you can kind of try some stuff you don't eat as often, but you can't do that 24 hours a day.
Right.
You can't be at an all-inclusive eating everything all day long.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Habit is the state of action where that which requires effort becomes effortless. And that's the goal of what we try to achieve in the way we teach the Eating for Abs course, is to make things which require effort effortless. That translates into how we pace the course, how the course is taught, how we channel your focus, and it's very successful if you adopt that way of thinking.
So I hear you saying that you want to get to that last piece. You're trying to, like, you've done incredible to this point and you're fantastic and there's no taking anything away from that. And you have additional goals to say, I want to lean out this last little bit moving forward. And I'm going to tell you what you have to do.
Okay.
It's not going to happen by accident.
Okay.
It's not going to happen by happenstance, or you're not going to slip and fall into it. In order to get to the point now where you're saying to your body that I aesthetically want to push past kind of that very healthy homeostasis into that more sculpted look you're talking about, you're going to have to be measuring again. You're going to have to, it's an embrace the science thing right now, right? It's
measuring my macros or measuring myself or measuring both?
Both.
Okay.
You need to know the inputs and the outputs, right? It's not going to happen simply from the workout, right? So the workout is very important. And what you're doing there is going to be your regular heavy lifting that you've been doing, which is, you want to do the big lifts, like the big six. So you're going to want to push, pull, squat, hip hinge, carry, and do some core work for sure, to a point where you're doing it, in a very intense fashion. You're going to want to do some high intensity work. So like some hill sprints or hit sprints, whatever you want to do, mm-hmm. would be great. You're going to keep your water where it needs to be. So you're going to be, you know what you have to be.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen by accident. Like, that stuff, you have to verify every once in a while that I am hitting my targets. And then regarding your macros, like, you've got to hit those. And even when you hit those, there's no guarantee that your body's going to move right away. So you might have to say, okay, I've measured for 2 weeks or so and watched what happened. And if I'm not getting the movement I want, then we may need to adjust those to tighten up a little bit. But you're fantastic as you are. You already know you're awesome. You're just pushing for more because you want more. And that's fine. But I don't want you to ever let this thing become, when people are trying to have a baby and they, at some point it becomes too much work. Like, yo, sex isn't even enjoyable anymore. And, I have to be there at a certain time to have sex. It's no longer the enjoyment of it. That becomes work. Don't let this get to that point where it's a point of negative feedback for you.
And I feel like it'll come. I really feel like I'll be there by the end of the year. But part of it is most of this was all going on when I wasn't sleeping. So I feel like if I sleep and have recovery and even did the same stuff, I feel like I would still be getting more results because I've consistently gotten results. I haven't really fully plateaued.
Right, right.
So it's like,
because you've been getting sleep now.
And if you add that, and while I've been sleeping, I have not been working out much.
Right.
So it's like, if you say, when's the last time I worked out consistently for like 3 weeks at a time?
Mm-hmm.
That was actually a while ago.
Right.
So I feel like, now that I'm actually your little arrows, I got that last arrow turned that direction.
Yeah.
That I feel like the rest of this, as I'm working, get my workouts back to where they need to be, I think it'll just kind of come off. Because it was the last piece. That was kind of like the last piece, and stuff was coming off even when periods shits were like this.
Right.
So I feel like now we're kind of like that. And there are some things that are, it's weird. You'll notice things that are leaner, but then it highlights something that's not as lean as it was, you know, that isn't as tight. Like, my thighs aren't quite as tight, but now that I've the lower portion of my thigh lean, I'm like, but my clothes actually are looser. But it's like, this to me looks a little larger, but as soon as this tightens back up, we'll be good.
You know,
I mean,
it's not a straight line, right? We know, like, the road to awesome is not a straight line.
Well, and the thing I can be happy with is that the things I look at that I'm like, oh, this can be better, nobody else is paying attention to.
Right.
And I know where I came. I know where I'm at. And, you know, just the fact that I can actually sleep now is a freaking miracle.
Right.
You know, that, and I feel like I'm in a very zen space. I meditate every day now.
I love it. Look at you.
And my doctor even was like, I thought you were going to make an appointment. I was like, well, I started meditating. I sleep now, so I didn't need to come in and get Ambien.
Yeah.
So I'd finally given up, was about to get Ambien, and then I started sleeping.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
But I meditate 20 to 30 minutes in the morning.
That's fantastic. So I'm just happy to, it makes me so happy to hear that things have stuck with you. You know what I mean? Like, that's a huge deal.
Well, and that's why I say, you know, I believe in your products and your course.
The Super Fantastic Show.